Today on the Cooligans, we are discussing the USMNT and the formation change. Yes, Pochettino made a couple changes. Did it work? Did it not work? Do we like the players that are there? Let's little recap on how this little weekend went with all these international matches.
Absolutely. Plus, we talk about what's going on in Nottingham Forest. There's some firings. There's some drama. Evangelinos Marinakis got his finger on the button. Who knows what's happening? So much. Plus, World Cup qualifying is going haywire. We don't need to qualify, but a lot of other countries do, and it is going nutty. Shouts to Cape Verde and so many more. That and much more today on The Cooligans.
I don't think, did anything big happen this week?
Wait, if you ask it that way, then my, you know, comedian mind goes right to jokes. So don't make me do that.
No, man.
People seem to be feeling different types of ways. I think you kind of know how we feel about what's going on here. I will say political violence, any violence. How about that? Let's not put the word
violence
political.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do shit to get shot. And don't shoot people.
I think that's a good code to live
by.
Obviously, the news about and obviously the images and video. I mean, it's horrific about Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk is not a person I ever think would really come up on this show in any aspect. I would assume most people who listen to the show, and definitely for myself, do not agree with anything he sort of lived his life by.
Well, and someone who tweeted something, I think I'd tell you, you'd be surprised.
Right. So you sort of learn where everybody sort of stands. You see, what a lot of people's YouTube recommended things were suggesting them. But
a lot of people we know in the manosphere.
It'd be weird to not address it on the show because it is such a, I think, big cultural moment across the United States. Because yes, this person was an incredibly impactful figure, but not for anything that I support. I mean, he is he was obviously, admittedly, a white supremacist, racist, misogynist. Said every single thing that he stood for, I completely disagree with.
Yeah, man.
And there's nothing, I don't take any pleasure in seeing anybody that I simply disagree with getting killed. That's horrible. But this sort of, I sort of expect it from like the administration. It's just like the praise that a person like this is getting. Whether they were alive or not alive, it makes no sense to me. It makes some sense to some people. I don't know why, but
I knew who the dude was, and I knew that I didn't agree with 99.999 of what this man stood for. Again, that doesn't affect that a mother and two children are now without their husband and father, right?
Yeah,
and that sucks. Happened to me, by the way, and I think I turned that over.
Right.
You know, it sucks, right? And you don't want that to happen. And certainly, you know, a bunch of kids showed up that day. I didn't realize this was a rally to argue with him.
Yeah. He does the debate tours.
Prove me wrong. So I didn't know that. So there was a lot of people in that audience that also didn't agree with him. There was a lot of people that did. And no, I don't think any of those people should have seen someone get murdered.
Yeah. It's incredibly traumatic.
Tough place to be. That said, I didn't realize he was a beloved figure. You know what I mean? I just thought he was like another one of these grifters that makes money off this.
Sure, yeah. No, I mean, I think he was very involved politically with this administration, literally advised, consulted, helped support, get, you know, candidates elected in different states and all this kind of stuff. The guy, he was very, very involved. Him and his team were very, very involved. He was more than just a pundit. He was a political force. And those tours going to different colleges is how he developed his audience and his fan base, by getting young, impressionable people. You know, I've seen obviously clips of these debates and stuff. I was just watching one where a student was like, "Oh, I was like racially profiled. I was called the N-word." And his response was, "I don't believe you. I don't believe that happened." And it's like, all right, well, what is that debate?
Yeah.
You know, it's just not really, I don't know how productive it is. You're just kind of just
that's how I'm gonna start debating you, actually. Now that I think about it, you just say some stuff. I'll be like, oh, okay, a liar.
And now, pants on fire.
And now we move on. You know?
So look, it is what it is. Whether you like what we're saying or not, I mean, that is the perspective. It's like when it comes to people being misogynist and racist and living their life that way, there's no way I'm going to support anything like that.
Yeah. I could think someone's abhorrent and not want them to die that way.
Exactly. So exactly.
It is what it is.
I think.
Let's talk about something a little bit lighter.
Sure.
Dogs.
Dogs.
Okay. Do we need them? That's today's top topic.
I think this. I think that might upset more people than the Charlie Kirk.
Here's all I'm gonna say. You know how they say dogs can sense whether you're a good person or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to turn that off? Because here's what I live my life by: a simple rule. I don't put my hair on your clothes. Don't you put your hair on my clothes? Okay.
Okay.
I went to my boy's place. He's a huge Chicago Bears fan. We got Mexican food. It was me, him, his girl, a couple other fellas. We show up. He's got a big bulldog, like one of those like cartoon walks on knuckles bulldogs. Like the kind of dogs that like people will rob. You know what I mean? Like if you're walking.
Didn't somebody steal like Lady Gaga's dog
that
a couple years ago?
Like 17 years ago. By the way.
It was like yes. 6 or 7. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The Challenger had just gone in the air. And Lady Gaga's dog got stolen. But yeah, remember her guy, the guy, I think he actually got shot. The dude with
the dog. Yeah.
So I don't know if it was a bulldog, but this is like a full big old English looking bulldog. Mm-hmm. Huge, you know? The type of jaw that you know you're losing fingers, okay?
Gotcha.
And first of all, have you ever patted one of these? It's just pure muscle.
It's they're meaty little things.
There
bro.
Is no give whatsoever.
they don't have love handles anywhere. They're
like a My Pillow. They're just you hit it. It's like hitting marble.
Right.
Covered in skin, you know. So this thing, I go to sit on the couch. There's two seats available on the couch. I go to sit on the couch. This dog jumps on the couch. To the area where I was going to sit, which was the other arm that no one was sitting on.
Right.
So I go, oh, this must be the dog's area. I'm going to go to the middle seat. I scooch over to get to the middle seat, and the dog scurries over to the middle seat. So I was like, oh, you want the whole thing? Or am I not allowed on the couch? Which is fine. This ain't my house.
Uh-huh.
This is more your house than it is my house. And the owner of the house goes like, no, come on. Hey, get off the couch. Let him sit. Right? So the dog scurries off the couch. I sit. Dog's now making eyes with me, man. I was like, hey, man, this ain't my choice, bro. Your boy told me to sit here. You know what I mean? So at some point, the dog hops up on the couch and like rolls itself into a little like Cinnabon. You know what I mean? Yeah. And lays on the side next to me. Okay. I'm watching the game.
That means they're comfortable with you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is what I found out. Then as I'm watching the game, I feel a body next to me. This dog has pressed itself against the side of my leg.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it just wants some warmth. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or does it want its seat back? You know, does it like the crack? You know how some people like the middle? You know what I mean? Between the two cushions?
Well, I would argue, before you finish, I mean, if a dog is more territorial, that would be very clear. So I don't think it was that.
You know that. I don't know that. I don't know what's happening. No one's making eyes on me.
Yeah.
Everyone's watching the TV screen. So now all of a sudden, I got this dog pressing me, and it keeps getting tighter and tighter to me. So I look at the owner of the dog. I say, yo, what's going on over here? He's like, oh, he's comfortable with you. I'm like, well, what a way to show it. You know what I mean? I'm comfortable with you. You don't see me wrapping myself around your leg, my guy.
Right.
All right, but it is what it is. It's a huge dog. It's his house. It's his couch. I don't want to do anything. Next thing I know, the dog put his head on my belly, and it's staring at me. But it's pressing down on my belly like, what's up?
Yeah, yeah.
We're friends here. And I'm like, I thought we were watching the game. So I take a photo of it, send it to my wife. She goes, pet the dog. So I do like Cruella fingers. It's the only thing I use like I'm like very gently touching it because I don't want to rustle the hair and get it all over me. Mm-hmm. Right. I send her a video of that. She goes, pet the damn dog, will you? So I pet it normally and I stop. The dog sees an opening, turns around, puts its paw on my shoulder and starts licking my ear.
Yes, yes. This is not...
But like aggressively, like that. My ear, wet willy like status. My ear is wet.
I'm waiting for the bad part. This all sounds wonderful.
All of this is bad. I asked for none of this. I did not request this. My shirt's covered in dog hair. My pants are covered in dog hair. I'm wearing a black t-shirt, by the way.
Yeah.
Covered in dog hair. My ear soaked with the same... This dog licks its balls, okay? And now my ear.
Right. But back to back.
So my question is, with, I just want the dog to know, like, I'm glad you're cool with me, and I'm glad that I put out an aura that makes you comfortable around me. Mm. But how do I let you know we don't need to be friends like that?
Well, I mean, look,
I need a friend zone. How do I friend zone a dog?
You look, this isn't as someone who has a dog. You sound like someone who just met a dog. That's the problem.
You've been in this world
so long, and you haven't.
I've never had a dog.
You've never had a dog, but you've never really interacted with a dog for a long amount of time.
I've been to your place when you had a dog, and what do I do when your dog comes around?
You just avoid it.
I ignore him.
Yeah.
I know. I'm glad you're here. It's your place. I don't believe. If you want me to leave, you start barking, I'll leave.
The current dog I have is the only pet I've ever had. And it's obviously changed my whole perspective on animals as a whole and definitely dogs. I'm much more.
No, you're a bad dog owner.
Why am
I? We got to get this out. You're a bad dog owner because your dog's pretty big and it will jump on people. And you know what you do? Just what you did there. You go. No, get it off me. This isn't cute.
Literally,
why are you giggling?
Your dog is attacking me.
Counterpoint, 90% of America thinks it's cute.
Okay.
90% of America thinks it's cute.
Well, then for the 10% of us, how do we stop this?
It is my dog. He sits
there giggling as your dog is clawing me to death.
He literally, all he wants to do is he'll put his paws on people.
Why?
And want to be pet. And
you understand
play.
That's rude. That is rude.
It is rude.
I can agree that's rude.
I'm not saying that it's not rude, but
it's rude.
It is cute.
Carter is pretending that's not rude. It's rude.
My dog is.
I love dogs. Yeah. So if that happened to me, I'd be so
you're
happy.
Part of the problem, Carter.
My dog is 23 pounds. Are you saying he's a big dog? He's not a big dog by any means.
Someone check it. How much does the big bag of rice weigh? Because that's what was coming at me. Was abuela's arroz bag.
With claws. It is something I would like to train out of him. He's not great with it.
See? You don't train away something that people like.
Because he shouldn't do that because some people might be uncomfortable with it.
And your training is what? Giggle when it happens.
Giggle when it happens. So he thinks it's really
great.
The kid
hits a giggle. And let me tell you something. It's very offensive because I'm like, when you're done having a little tickle fest with yourself, could you get this fucking this animal off me?
He's a lovely dog. He just wants to play.
I didn't say he wasn't.
But I get it. I just the thing is that dogs are incredibly affectionate, and that's the one thing I've very much learned.
If I walked in your house and I immediately paws on your lady, started licking her face,
you'd
say Alexis isn't invited over anymore. So let's stop making excuses for the dog.
Okay, look, if you want to press charges, go ahead. What am I gonna do?
Imagine your dog's in handcuffs. You got to use two handcuffs, right? Do you go front to back on the left, front to back on the right, or do you go both back?
This is the gene dilemma with dogs.
Because if you go front, back, it can still run.
It's also another conversation I've had to make it soccer related. If you nutmeg a dog, is it between both pairs of legs or between through the front?
It counts as a double nutmeg if you go between the two front and between the two back.
Okay.
But if you go under the body like Fast and the Furious under a truck?
Yeah.
You're good. That's a nutmeg.
That counts as a pretty good nutmeg. Yeah. Everybody, but let us know how you feel about how you nutmeg a dog. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Alexis, if you listen to the audio of the podcast, you'll hear how much he hates dogs.
I don't hate dogs.
But go
listen to the show.
Hot show today. I'm very excited, per usual.
Every time.
We have a lot to discuss. We're going to take a look back at the international window for the U.S. men's national team and kind of, we did the live show the other day, but we have a couple other thoughts on those two matches. We have to take a look at some Premier League stuff, especially with Nuno getting sacked at Nottingham Forest. We'll talk about that. And
future me is up to his old tricks.
And World Cup. We have a couple countries that have already qualified.
What? There's going to be a World Cup.
In this economy. So we'll take a look at who's already qualified and who is on the bubble.
Let's go. All right. But obviously, we have to start because this is huge, right? Look, USMNT fans, they were at their lowest. And then all of a sudden, Pochettino makes a very small change. And it had such a huge effect on the formation that suddenly USMNT fans are back up. This is important to talk about because is this change the secret sauce that makes the USMNT so much better coming into the World Cup? This is our top topic. that is brought to you and presented by Buchanan's Blended Scotch Whiskey, an official FIFA World Cup 26 supporter. Nos vamos al Mundial with a Bucanita in hand.
This is the top topic.
Let's go. All right. So we have differing thoughts on it. So obviously the game against Korea started 4-3-2-1, which is I think similar also to what Greg Berhalter played as well. But the game against Japan was three at the back. So it was what was it, a three? What would be the formation?
3-5-2 or 3-4-1-2
Something like that. Yeah,
it really depends. I mean, now formations are kind of ever evolving.
Nebulous and weird and stuff like that.
Nebulous is a great word. So I think even when Greg Berhalter was managing, you'd see in attack, it would essentially become a three at the back because one of the fullbacks would venture very far forward, usually Sergiño Dest. So it's not that big of a shift. The difference is in understanding where you're standing and where you're marking. I think the 3-5-2 or the 3-4-1-2 is a very good formation and is probably the right move going forward at in moments, because that for me, it's positive in the sense that it counts as a surprise, right? I think back to when Mikel Arteta first showed up to Arsenal. The only trophy he's won at Arsenal was in that first half season in 2020 when he used the 3-5-2 or the 3-4-1-2 in order to win the FA Cup because people weren't prepared for it. And that to me is the biggest benefit of it, is that if your squad is comfortable playing in those positions, it counts as a shift. It counts as a change for what the opposition is prepared for.
Sure.
Or certainly causes them to have to prepare for two separate lineups. So there's a lot of positives. Our players are athletes. And I've been talking about this for years. We develop athletes, right? If you go back to Soccernomics, they talk about what makes a footballing country. It's high GDP, high protein, right? If you have those two when you're developing young players.
Two of your favorite things, bro.
Easy, everybody. Right? Right. Hey, if anyone listened in the car and your mom just perked up, you know what she was getting into back in the day.
Okay. Now I didn't think we're gonna get into diet so quickly. Yeah.
She's like, if he got high GDP, I want his protein. That's what your mom was thinking, bro. It's crazy.
All right. Shout out to all the moms out there.
Shout out to all the horny moms, bro.
Okay.
So they count those two. Obviously, one of the biggest anomalies is the US, right? Because we don't have the coaching. But we have athletic players. So how do you use that? Think back to like 10 years ago when we started this podcast. MLS's writers did a huge research piece about what is the American style of playing, right? Do we have a style, right? If I say, what's the Spanish style? You already know. What's the traditional Italian style? You already know. What is the traditional American style? We didn't have one. What we had was kind of counterattacking because we have athletes. Mm-hmm. We have players that, especially if they play multiple sports, like Kyle Martino always talks about, we have athletes. How do we use that to our effect? A 3-5-2 uses our best abilities, right? You can heavily press. You're controlling the midfield. You're overloading the midfield. We have athletes that are center backs that can get back, not counting Tim Ream, who's a little bit older. For the most part, it plays to our strengths. But if you do it every time, everyone already understands how to play against 3-4-1-2 or a 3-5-2. We already know that. So it's not necessarily going to be the way forward only. Being able to add that to your arsenal of saying, you know what? In this second match in the group stage, we're going to come out in a 3-4-1-2 and they won't be prepared for it. That is the power of this additional formation.
Which is fair, and I think it's a optimistic look at it. Like, if we just add this to our toolbox, then nobody's going to see it coming.
But I mean, how many national teams have multiple formations that they play? Not many. You don't have that much time with them.
True, but they are capable. I mean, they do this at their clubs. The players play, you know, they're at different clubs that play different formations, and they're familiar. They can adapt. I mean, look, the game against South Korea is a good example because we started at 4-2-3-1, and then in the second half, went with three at the back and were immediately better. Way more chances created. Maybe that's also a factor of the personnel. Balogun getting into the game again. Josh Sargent, I think we've seen enough.
Let it go, Chris.
I can't.
Let it go, dude.
I can't stop bringing
this
up.
What did this guy do?
I just hope Pochettino listens. So I think that's a huge factor. Matt Doyle on MLSsoccer.com wrote a great article about this, exactly what we're talking about, and how the formations look across both games. What you notice is that when We play with four at the back. And again, I don't know if it's simply about personnel or anything else. We play much more cautious. And we just don't, there's just not, we sacrifice creating chances up top to play better defense. And this is, this can't be the necessarily the approach.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say overloading the midfield removes that, right? Because that's where we have most players. So we'll be able to cycle the ball more in our midfield. So we're not depending on our back line as
right,
much.
Right. So, I mean, look, in the game against South Korea, Sergiño Dest started the game. Sergiño Dest obviously coming back from injury, hasn't even had that many minutes at his club, you know, and then definitely this is, I believe, his first time getting called back into the national team in
he looked great. A year. The red card, probably, right? Did he get injured after the red card?
He got injured. Yeah, he got injured with his club. That. So, so yeah. So if you think about even a player like Sergiño Dest, is he ready? He's like, is he fitting in right now? Like, is he at his most confident to be playing on the national team and doing everything that Pochettino is sort of asking him to do? I'm just trying to make sense of like why were we so cautious in the beginning of the game against South Korea, and then it was just completely different against Japan. So
yeah, but I mean, I also, because we have such a mix and match squad, mm-hmm. some A, some B, some C in there. There's not the, you know, the comfortability. There's not the familiarity with,
sure.
with each other. So defensively. So
this is, I mean, we go back to what I was screaming about on the live show where I'm saying, like, we don't need mixing it up right now. We need stability and comfort. That's what I want to see. So I understand the look, if we, I'm not with the formation.
Is what gives us the opportunity to find this.
I agree. But then again, that is the con, right? The negative is that then we have games like we have against South Korea where we outshoot them, whatever, 20 something to whatever, and we get no goals, right? So I understand that there's some games
still a friendly.
It is a friendly, and we're gonna work on certain aspects of the game, whether it's offense or defense and midfield. I mean, Christian Roldan was pretty good in the game against Japan. So that was like good to see. And maybe that is a question of like, could he make it to the roster? But I hate that I'm even asking that right now. That's my frustration. Like, we should have a pretty solid, like, hey, we know there should be like one or two spots right now. I feel like that should be up for grabs. And then the rest should be kind of set in stone. But and that's not on Pochettino himself. That's on the players too, for not, you know, for not having strong seasons, for, you know, everything happening with, you know, Weah going to a different club and not getting a lot of minutes at Juve, which are most likely that's why he left, because he was like, oh, if I'm not going to get a spot, the World Cup is coming up. Same thing, McKennie not getting called in. I don't understand this. So and now the conversations about what I was seeing after the game against South Korea is people saying, should they sack Pochettino and bring in Brian Schmetzer?
It's crazy.
I mean, and so this is, and then Pochettino with his responses and getting a little aggro in press conferences.
He was going a little and. He was angry a little.
This is not what we need, bro. There's more to his job than simply picking out the right tactics and picking out the right place. He also has to, like, get everybody in line, get everybody believing in the project. So he has to have some level of charm and communication to be able to do these things as well. So that's where it's like, we could go over like formations and stuff like that. And again, this was the game against Japan, I thought was one of Pochettino's best performances, and I have to give him credit when it's due. I think the even though I was like skeptical of the lineup, I thought we were going to lose 2-0.
I said 2-1. I thought we were going to lose as well. But can I give Pochettino credit for one thing? There was a moment in the game, and I think all three of us noticed it. Like towards the end of the match, towards the middle of the second half, suddenly Japan's better players, quote unquote, start coming in. I mean, Amino was one, but I couldn't remember who else was coming in at the time. We're looking at that. All three of us in this room went, oh, here we go. Now we're going to lose. We looked even better after that.
Sure.
And it wasn't necessarily that we were better against the better players. We brought in Jack McGlynn, Diego Luna, and I think somebody else in that moment. Maybe you can, if you have it there, tell me. And we're bringing, again, MLS-level players, and we were taking out, I think Pulisic came out, and I can't remember who else came out. we were taking out our top tier players and we were bringing in MLS level players, even though we've seen Diego Luna and Jack McGlynn play really, really well when given opportunities at moments and have other moments that are maybe a bit more regrettable. But we've seen these players, even though perform well, we thought there's no comparison to the Minaminos of the world and whatnot when they're coming in. And suddenly we're getting even more shots on target. We're looking more aggressive. Jack McGlynn, I think in his, by his third touch already has a shot on target that looked dangerous. This, it provided me an opportunity to say, all we simply needed to do was overload the midfield and trust that our backline has the pace and speed and the discipline to not just get back, but not really come out of position. And that in and of itself, and simply, I think in agreeing with what you're talking about, which is we can't be that conservative and sit back and just be good defensively and hope that we can eke out wins. Because look, 20 plus shots on target and we don't score.
Yeah.
It seemed like
not on target, but
So, 20 shots and we don't score. So seemingly we're figuring out a way to be a bit more aggressive. And I think also Balogun started really to come into his own in a way we haven't seen since the Nations League in Vegas 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was under BJ Callahan. This was the most fluid I'd seen him taking those chances, trying to find that connectability and that chemistry with Pulisic and some of the other players up front. I looked at that, and Zendejas looked good. When was the last time Zendejas looked good?
Yeah, Pochettino said something along the lines that if he keeps playing like that, he's gonna have a strong chance of making the World Cup roster.
If he has a strong chance of making the World Cup roster, that is proof that why you shouldn't be upset of all this experimentation, because he's trying to see what these guys are made of in crunch time, in tough matches, when the stakes are against them, to see how they react, to see if they're good enough to be in the squad. And look, Zendejas is an example of, if he wasn't testing these players, Zendejas would have been out and we all would have been in agreement. He had his chances. Let him out. Sargent had an opportunity. He proved he doesn't have it.
But also, I mean, I understand the idea.
Think there's a positive?
I do think there is a positive.
You don't think it's even a net positive?
Losing a friendly doesn't
matter as much as getting not the players.
Zendejas is not a person I would use as an example of that he doesn't I have less of a problem with Zendejas being called in than I have a problem with McKennie not being called in. Like, that is my issue. Like, these are the players you know are going to be there, and to not call them in. And again, my assumption that there's no injury or anything.
But let's take a look at McKennie. Let's say he's available and just simply wasn't called in, right? Because it gives you an opportunity to test another player to see maybe they have a good connection, maybe they play.
Yes.
And this gives us a chance to have a better player in the squad with a little bit more experience now and a little bit more understanding of what Mauricio Pochettino may want from them if they're called into a match or if they're needed because of a McKennie injury. You don't think that's a net positive overseeing Weston McKennie again? In a friendly for 60 minutes?
No, I don't
minutes?
Think it's a net positive, but there are positives. I'm not saying that there aren't any, but I don't think it's a net positive.
How is it not a net positive? Because I'm really not understanding where you're coming from.
Because the stability and confidence of the team, I think, is more important right now than the experimentation. So I'm not saying I'm 99% that we need stability over experimentation.
No, I get what you're saying. I think you're wrong, but at least now I understand what you're saying, and I just don't agree.
Well, sure. I mean, and that is the...
So there you go. Christian's wrong, I'm right.
I think the positives of winning games, even though they're friendlies, the positive of winning games is a bigger net positive than Zendejas scoring that goal. Right. That's my opinion. It's not even about right or wrong, but that's...
No, it is about right or wrong on the show, and I think you're wrong.
I think I think winning games against tough opponents will do more for the preparation into the World Cup than just trying out different formations and different players and stuff like that.
All right.
That's my thought.
I need both of you to answer. So I need you to include this. Winning a game, friendlies don't count as wins.
They literally do. But yeah, but psychologically,
no.
You look at the score and you're like, I beat Switzerland.
Sure.
I'm wearing a U.S. shirt. I just beat Switzerland.
In a friendly.
As opposed to
can take multiple players out. So, you have multiple
So
subs.
You're saying losing, 4-0 doesn't hurt psychologically? Losing to Switzerland 4-0, you're just like, it's just a friendly.
It doesn't, well, I'll say it doesn't mean as much. It certainly hurts a little, but if you're like, hey, in the first 30 minutes, we're going to try this. And then in the second half, we're going to try this. And then we're going to bring in these players. It's not about the result in a friendly. It's about what it is that you're trying to get out of the game, what the coach is looking at. So if it's simply about like, can we do a box midfield? If you lose 4-0, guess what we found out? We can't do a box midfield, at least with those players. It ain't about the result. The result's not
but
important. No,
but you can't you can't say it's not about the result.
It's not about the results. It's friendly.
Pochettino gets paid lots of money. The USA...
Not for friendlies.
The Federation is not like, oh, it's not about the result. They're not saying
it's not about the result.
No, people are paying money to go see these friendlies, to see them experiment and not have not be at least entertaining.
No. Sure, look.
Don't agree with that.
We're not talking about the money side of it. We're simply talking about what percentage from 0 to 100 do you think the final result of a friendly, how important it is?
I don't know, like 70%?
I think it's maybe 10 to 20%.
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't agree.
Maybe
I
mean, you give up a lead in the second half, and that makes that.
I mean, there's a difference between losing 4-0 and like 2-1. Yes, I mean, like that's in a friendly, that's still a pretty good result.
The 2-1 is worse than the 4-0 in a friendly.
Alexis,
how are you guys not in agreement with me right now?
Carter,
if you lose in the last second because of a dumb mistake, that right there is worse than a 4-0 where what you set out to learn didn't work.
Wrong. No, that's ridiculous.
How are you guys not agreeing with this?
I haven't agreed with anything you've just said in the last like 3 minutes.
Well, then we're cutting that out of the show. No, I'm being dead ass. This is ridiculous.
It psychologically hurts so much worse for the players, the coaching staff, the fans to lose 4-0 than 2-1.
Friendlies are simply a booked open mic. That's all it is. There's just audience watching a closed door training. It's an open door training. That's all a friendly is. It's a training exercise. The fact that you're treating it like a full result is ridiculous.
I'm not treating it like a full result. I said like 70%. Not a full result. If it was a World Cup game, then it would be 100%.
Of course. If it was even if it was a meaningless, you know, the fourth match in a group stage where you've already qualified, that's more meaningful
than
a friendly.
I'm just saying that the residue of winning friendlies carries over to those competitive matches.
Friendly, bro. We have to be a much better footballing nation, dude, where friendly should not matter this much. This is ridiculous. This is small.
You're
this
saying
is low bank
the
moves.
Antithesis.
These are small country, small club moves. We need to be thinking bigger of ourselves. A friendly is an opportunity to test yourself, to test certain ideas against a different team than you have in training. It is not under no circumstances should we walk away beating Japan thinking we're better than Japan. We're simply had better tactics on that
not
day
saying
where
that.
Our players played
not
better in
that.
Those moments.
I'm saying that in this training session that winning is also a factor, a positive that you can get that can be helpful for the future.
I think if you pulled,
doesn't really matter.
I think if you pulled the 18 players that were available that game, they would all disagree with you. And I think if you pulled the coaches across the board, if you pulled professional players,
right,
they would tell you you're wrong.
All right, we gotta get a poll.
Tell us what
anonymous,
you think.
Anonymous survey
that?
Of all the...
You know what, Carter? Get Pots on the phone, damn it. Do your job.
Anyway.
I think... I want the fans to tell me, what do you think?
Okay. Well, we're recording this, so they're not like live right now. They're not going to talk to you.
But when they see
the camera,
they're going to think I'm talking to them. You're like, how do you know I'm taking a shit right now?
Well, hopefully we've made your poop entertaining.
Yeah, it's literally our job.
All right. So what's better, the 4-3-2-1 or the 3-5-2? Let us know in the comments.
Stop pushing so hard. You're going to get a couple friends back there.
All right. We're going to talk some Premier League news right after this. All right, welcome back. So, yes. Ange Postecoglou has been announced as the Nottingham Forest manager, which is a bit of a surprise. But Nuno Espirito Santo, he got sacked after having beef with Evangelos Marounakis, the owner. He got the team to Europe, helped them stay up after they got deducted points. And so, was that the right move? And is Ange the right manager to move forward? So, let's take a look and run that back. So, let's start with some of the beef because Nuno in the first, before I believe the first game of the season, he was asked about, you know, his relationship with the owner.
Well, it started last year. Remember, Evangelinos Marounakis stayed on the pitch mm-hmm. and that British people were like, how dare an owner who owns the team in the building? I don't know if they
do everything he's allowed to do.
Yeah, how dare he walk around and monitor the thing he owns? Which I have an issue with the way British people sort of want to treat owners, which is like, we want you to spend all the money you have, but don't you dare walk around here and enjoy it.
Don't even talk to me.
This is for me, not for you. Again,
put the cash on the table and shut your damn mouth.
Turn around and walk out. So I'm like, if you want to walk around, you want to walk around. I also understand this guy could be a bit of a lightning rod, right?
Right.
Him standing around on the pitch is not just an owner checking the grass. He's putting pressure.
And we joked about the Morgan Gibbs White video of him signing when he was Mr. announced.
Maranakis.
Fabrizio, he here we go, Morgan Gibbs White to Tottenham. And then all of a sudden we see a video of basically, if it was a video of, Maranakis having Morgan Gibbs White in a headlock and being like, hey, you ain't going, just noogies and be like, you ain't going anywhere.
You ain't going nowhere. Now you can't leave.
I would be
Maranakis closes the door.
I'd be like, okay, this is typical Maranakis stuff.
But again, I mean, the jokes abound, right? The jokes are all about how he's like a big, expressions called him the Greek Suge Knight.
Yeah, dude.
Right? Like he puts pressure on people. He expects the best. He feels there's something nefarious about his past that we can't really put our finger on, but it feels there's stuff allegedly that that sort of fear surrounds
him. He wouldn't want you going through his banking records. That's
no,
all.
No. And if you did, you might go for a little flight out of a window. This guy sort of holds himself in this era of like, I'd rather be feared than loved. There's something about that.
Yeah.
And you see it play out. Nuno Espirito Santo, I think, is a incredible manager, boring style of play. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm almost like maybe this frees Nottingham Forest of this doldrum style of playing, this like defend, and then counterattack. Maybe you can make the argument that it works for them and they have the right players for it. Chris Wood certainly benefit from it. The fans are just happy to be in Europe. They should have probably been in Europa, but whatever. They got bumped down to or whatever. Yeah, they took over Europa and Crystal Palace goes into conference. So got them into a big European competition. So maybe it works. But in the end, I'm like, you know what? They kind of needed to move away from that anyway. So this kind of opens the door for that. I'm not a Maranakis apologist or making excuses for him. But in a way, I'm like, this actually works better for us having to view the games. But how fast it happened. It went from this is the greatest season we've had since they won Europe in like the 50s or something.
I think it was the 80s or something.
I think it was like that. It might have been the 50s. Let's see who's closer. Carter, look it up.
Yeah,
look up.
When did Nottingham Forest?
And then all of a sudden it turned sour. There were some rumors that maybe it was Adu, that it wasn't Evangelinos Maranakis.
Adu and the sporting director.
The sporting director for all of the clubs, right? He handles all the clubs under Maranakis' umbrella. There were some rumors that it was Matt, that maybe something else. But you don't really see this happening with like a Jorge Mendes player or coach.
Oh, sure.
Usually there's like a little bit more control in the back.
Mm-hmm. Were you asking about the Champions League or their last league title?
The Champions League.
Won the Champions League in 1980.
Oh, you're right. Look at that. 80. Boom. So I'm shocked with how it happened. But because of the sort of character that Maranakis is, this doesn't surprise me at all. And also, this is kind of par for the course for the Premier League. Think back to Abramovich. That guy would fire managers in a year and a half.
No, sure. Also, speaking of Abramovich, the news about Chelsea's charges that they got to deal with from the Abramovich era have just come up. And that's just something they're going to have to address in the future.
Whatever. I think everything at Chelsea is perfectly fine.
We shall see. I don't necessarily agree with the boring sort of assessment. I mean, I think the season that they just had, you got to give credit to the manager for the team looking as good as they did. Like they found ways to sort of like unlock that offense. And obviously Chris Wood, Morgan Gibbs-White, keeping Morgan Gibbs-White obviously very important. But Callum Hudson-Odoi is another one who's just like couldn't really find much success at Chelsea, and then all of a sudden he's like a bigger fish in this smaller pond, and
it's just the trust of a manager,
But they've had fantastic seasons as a collective and individually those players. Now Ange this is where you could probably make the argument, like, as far as some, like, a little bit of boring football. Maybe Carter can weigh in on this as well. But this is where this doesn't feel like this feels like a petty beef and a petty move.
Petty
as far as, like, getting rid of Nuno. It's like, let's get rid of it. Doesn't feel like it's the right, this was the right decision for the club at the time.
Can I just counter that real quick? If there's not harmony between the top and all the way down to the players, down to, like, even the janitor, everyone, if there isn't harmony, you're not going to have a successful season. So if it's the owner versus the manager, who's going
to
win?
I understand that, but it has to be, you can't be grown-ups and just talk it out, figure it out. It has to be.
You don't think that happened? First of all, you've seen Evangelos Marinakis. You having that conversation?
But even for Marinakis, it feels like, hey, I'm going to prove a point, I'm going to hurt my club. That's my concern and fear. That's what I think.
I get why you're saying that, but I think this is a move of this club. The badge is bigger than Nuno. Nuno may have gotten to this point, but that doesn't mean another manager can't get us forward, more forward, or even higher up this table.
Yeah, we don't.
And I think this, it's a good move if you're not getting along. And if you cannot find that harmony, it's the right thing to do to get rid of a manager. We've seen managers stay on for too long or get too much. I'm more shocked by Ange Postecoglou getting sacked at Tottenham than I am by Nuno Espirito Santo getting sacked at Forest.
Sure, I think they're both sort of shocking, given that they both got their teams to Europe.
And one of them got them a trophy.
That is true. So I understand. And so, but on the face of it, I feel like Nuno's a more chill guy than Ange. I would imagine Ange is going to have the same exact problems with Marinakis.
But this is going to be
real soon.
This is going to be telenovela level arguing. It's going to be on camera. Straight up arguing. Right. There may be some shoving matches.
If Marinakis is looking for, like, a soldier that just does what he's told,
that's not the guy.
And Postecoglou is not the guy I'm thinking about.
He's not a consigliere level. So, I don't know why I brought that that word up.
So that's my concern.
So I said they were a little boring. And that's mostly on the pitch. Now off the pitch, having Evangelos Marinakis, Adu doing whatever he does, and Ange Postecoglou, that's going to be, every week we're going to have something to talk about.
Very much so.
Until he's sacked in the third week of the season.
For Ange Postecoglou, he's walking into kind of a better situation. Like, as far as not the money that is available for a team like Nottingham Forest. But he has, like,
I don't know where the money coming from, but he might have more money.
But I'm just saying, definitely not the money, because they got hit with the PSR stuff last season. So Nottingham Forest can't just spend and do whatever they want. But he has a better team, a better just current, like, you know, probably 12 to 14 players of, like, I can probably win more with this group than I can with Tottenham.
I don't know if they're exactly his style of players, but I kind of agree with you that he has more to work with, essentially just in the squad. I'll also say he's done really, really well when he doesn't have everything he wants, right? He won with Brisbane Roar, and he won with Celtic. Now, Celtic, yes, in the Premiership, you're talking the top of the top, right?
Yeah.
It's between them and Rangers every year, and everyone else tries to play for third. But it's not like Celtic could just go out and sign whoever they want. They ain't got it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is actually fits into his pattern more.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. This is a... it's going to...
He wants to be the underdog.
Sure. Hey, look, this is definitely less scrutiny, less attention. The post-match conferences are probably going to be a little bit less contentious and stuff like that.
Here's what I want to ask. How does this end? At the end of the season, where are Nottingham Forest? Where's Ange? Where's Marinakis?
I'm going to say they're not going to be better than they were last season. So they're not getting relegated. I think they'll be a mid-table team.
Ange last the whole season?
Does he last the whole season? Yes. I mean, Marinakis has to, unless they are in a relegation battle, which I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think he's going to. He will last the entire season.
I think By the winter transfer window, he's gone. I just can't see a world where these two, unless they're, like, all of a sudden buddy-buddy, and maybe they have, like, similar personalities. I can't see how these two get along. Especially with the way Ange treated the media.
Right, if that's
how he is, if he's, like, a curmudgeon in the front office.
Marinakis and Ange are apparently very good friends. Very, very good friends.
Friends?
Yeah. They're both Greek.
They're both Greek.
They're very, very good friends. Apparently.
I mean, yeah.
They're Cypriots? Is that what you said?
They're both Greek. Greeks. They're both Greeks. Greeks.
Obviously, okay. Yeah. Postecoglou obviously raised in Australia, but yeah, but a Greek background.
We haven't even talked about that. My guy just went out and hired a Greek. That's crazy.
Well, next, you know, the sporting director, Stavros Halkias.
Yeah, damn.
I love it. I just, Marinakis and Postecoglou, Marinakis is going to get on the pitch and they're going to do like the Dragon Ball Z fusion. Yeah. Like, hey, no, we cool.
But with feta in your hands.
Well, homies, yeah. Bro. All right.
Imagine they win a title and they start breaking plates. That'd be awesome. I would love that.
I just love this. Thank you for sharing your culture with us.
Yeah. Right? Astoria going to be lit for Nottingham Forest, bro.
All right. We got to talk some World Cup, so we'll do that when we come right back.
All right, welcome back. Let's take a look around the league. Hey, how about we go around the world to some of these World Cup qualifiers, huh?
Let's go.
Add that sound, Carter. why don't we talk about Messi? He's crying a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because somebody showed him a picture of the Seattle Sounders, but it's because it's because he played.
Showed him a picture of Paul Rothrock.
Damn. Roldan. Okay. Messi cried because he had an emotional moment looking around as he played possibly, allegedly, maybe, asterisk, his last meaningful match on inside of Argentina.
Okay, within.
Within the frontera.
Enveloped by Argentina.
Being hugged by the people of Argentina. Clearly a meaningful moment in a win. He scores a brace against Venezuela.
Yep. It was obviously cool to see, and you would hope that he would have a good game in what is possibly his last game in front of Argentinian fans within Argentina. There was a little bit, the goals that he scored, and this happened, I was watching this game, and there were a lot of moments of
did they play get it to Messi?
They a lot of get it, yeah, to Messi, and not the, there weren't like bad chances either. Like it made sense, but there was just even the second goal, which Thiago Almada passed him the ball, and it's like, Thiago, you would have taken the shot,
pretty
much any time. And Messi had to do what Messi does to end up making it a goal. He shoots through four players or something, but it's like the easier shot. The easier opportunity was just you taking the shot, so you could tell that they wanted to give him that moment. And
you ever see those videos of the guys who walk up to a dude on a date and be like, "Hey, Steve, yo, dude, oh, yo, you're the guy who paid for my groceries the other day. Thank you." And he's like, "Yeah, sure, yeah, wow, yeah, your wingman,
like, man." This guy, the girl is like, "Wow, this guy's a
great guy. Huh? I'm glad I went on a date with him."
Mayor or something.
Yeah. So for me, that's what they were doing to Messi.
Yeah, it was a lot.
But here's
that.
The thing: I don't really believe this is Messi's last meaningful match in Argentina.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's playing in a league where he's able to sort of slow it down a little bit in a way, right? I don't necessarily think MLS is a slower league, or a less aggressive league, or a less physical league than any other league out there. In fact, there may be more of some of those things. But he can sort of take it easy. He can take days off when he needs to. I think there's also the understanding, like, you'll mitigate the physical ability that he has and his talents, and let him stay out there as long as possible. I feel like we're going to get a little bit of a run after the World Cup, especially if they don't win the World Cup. If he wins the World Cup, he's done. But if they don't win the World Cup,
they're going to do some like testimonial big game. I mean, he's not going to not play
meaningful.
Yeah, a competitive game. Either
I
like
think he's going to keep going. You think he's done after this World Cup? If they don't win the World Cup, you think he's fully retires?
If they don't, I think he's going to probably go one more year after the World Cup. So I would imagine the end of 2027, that
you're
MLS
talking about
season.
Okay, club, but country.
Country.
You think he retires from the national team?
Yes. Oh, no. I not retiring from the national team. I think he's going to obviously retire. I think he will retire at the same time. Not like he's not going to retire from the national team before he retires with Inter Miami. That's my thought. I think it'll be he'll do those both at the same time. How old is Messi right now? He's 38. So he's going to be 40 is effectively when
touching
he retires.
Touching 40, yeah, when he retires.
When he retires. That's my thought. If he goes past that, then the dude is like, I mean, what more do you want, buddy? Like, you got the World Cup. The country loves you. You are a god.
I think the ego move, the only competition he has now is the legacy of Maradona. He's won everything else. He's won Copa America. Mm-hmm. He's won World Cup. He's won countless titles in club form. There's no question about his club form. And now there's no question about his
No MLS Cup. So, obviously going to be a taint. Not a taint.
Even superheroes have weaknesses, you know? But I think the biggest thing for him to win now, because even if he wins MLS Cup, no one's really going to care. But other than Miami fans, obviously.
You don't think Buenos Aires is going to go crazy? Going to flip over cars?
No. I think a couple people shake hands and they'll go back to grilling steaks.
He won the London Donovan MLS MVP.
El MVP. No, I think
Maradona nunca hizo eso.
Couldn't do it. I hate too many demons. I think beating Maradona's legacy is the only thing left. I think it's a game of golf now.
He's done that already?
No, not to the people of Argentina.
Yeah.
To some, he may have matched. I'm sure there's a few where he's overtaken. I think if you ask the majority of them, I think Maradona still held at a higher standard.
Okay.
Or at a higher level.
Sure.
Now, standard is the wrong word. He's held at a higher.
Yeah, that might be
in higher regard.
It might be one of those like boomers. Maradona is for boomers. Right. And then like millennials and Gen Z is Messi. So, I think this is the time to like get closer to like he's not going to be around
acceptance.
That much longer.
Yeah,
just acceptance and stuff like that. And you know, we take the good with the bad. We had the moment.
The way you said it is like, yo, grandpa forgot grandma's name. We got to start coming up with a contingency plan about where he's going to live.
Okay,
who's going to take care of him?
Plenty of lovely retirement homes in Florida.
Which one of us gets his house? You the one who's going to have to go change his diaper now.
So we'll see. All right. A couple of the World Cup stories. There was a game between Italy played against Israel. World Cup qualifier.
What might
really
be
one
of the best matches I've ever seen in my life.
It was a 5-4 victory for Italy, which is it's just like kind of wild. But a lot of the drama came after the match, after the final whistle, because we saw Donnarumma kind of arguing with a lot of the Israeli players. We saw Gattuso, the manager for Italy, arguing with people as well.
He ain't afraid of a scrap.
Shut the F up kind of a thing. He was in a lot of people's faces. Apparently, I don't know if it's the Israel FA put out some statement that the players were being taunted by Donnarumma and stuff like that, which is, who is shocked by this?
Also, forget the countries we're talking about. You're telling me that one soccer team taunted another one during the game?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
When will society stop with these horrific acts?
I don't know. And this has been a thing. So not only in football, there's also Eurobasket is going on now.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, entertaining games. I've been seeing highlights and stuff like that. And Israel's been playing.
When I was in Italy, I was watching him a lot as my wife was like, I'll be ready in 5 minutes. And that's an hour.
Right. So,
you know what I mean? I'm watching it on the television. It's absolutely incredible.
There have been people doing, I've been watching like streamers do like watch alongs for some of the games. And it's generational hate watches, right? They're like, it was Greece. Played against Israel, and everybody's just like, Giannis, dunk off him, crush him, bro.
They
don't want them to succeed at all. And obviously, with everything going on, they're not a popular country right now. So a lot of people. So this,
but there's also a lot of issues with Israel being allowed in Europe.
Right.
Because where else could you put them?
Because of everything going on, there's been more people asking. They're like, why is Israel playing in European competitions? And then they'll be like, oh, well, the...
Infantino's like, because they're a white. I'm not supposed to say that.
but then they'll be like, oh, well, the African federations don't want them in their federation. And it's like, well, why don't they want... Like, and they don't want to answer that question, right?
Yeah.
I think the issue is when you hear... being like, oh, they were mean to us. And it's like, this is what you want? You want sympathy for Italians yelling at you after a sport? It's like, there's a little bit of like, okay, we're not going to give you that much sympathy. But then it's also from a sporting thing. It's like, why are you crying? Like, It was you also, had you
this
lost.
Isn't a surprise.
Right.
Have you never been friends with Italians before? This is what they do.
It's also, not a shock. I'm look, in,
this is like us arguing that our family members used our biggest insecurities as nicknames. That's what Latinos do.
You're gonna
dude.
Get yeah. If this is how you want to be a neighbor to yeah. the rest of the yeah. in the countries, this is what's gonna happen. I don't even know why is it a shock. And then Norway.
Also, here's what I'll say. Tell me what they said, and I'll let you know if I agree or not.
I can't make any quick assumptions. I need to know what was said.
We kind of need to hear what was being said.
Because I kind of think Donnarumma might have made some points.
yeah. He might have just been stating facts. And you're like, how dare you bring up things we've
right.
done.
Did he recently read something from a UN charter? I think I might agree with him. I don't know.
Yeah. Is he a member of UNICEF?
So I might, anyway. But
is he friends with Greta?
So the interesting thing too, I believe the upcoming Israel's next match is against Norway, and the I think they announced that all the proceeds from that game will be going to like a Gaza charity.
Uh-huh.
And look, this is everybody's obviously trying to. It's been 2 years of just horrific scrolling through your phone and seeing all this stuff, and everybody's trying to affect some sort of change. And so I applaud Norway for even this. It's a big stance because in UEFA, people get in trouble for even showing any support for Palestinians and stuff like that. So I think the tide is like slowly kind of turning, but Norway kind of making the statement really says a lot, really financially kind of just putting your money kind of where your mouth is rather than making a big statement. Yeah. It also is a powerful statement in itself as well.
You're wearing the Grant Wall jersey. No more than this last 2 years have I wished Grant Wall was here.
100%.
His articles would have been amazing.
All right. Next up, let's talk.
Also, can someone get an Italian jersey for Jerry Seinfeld? You gotta send him in a Tsuri shirt. What are you, please?
It's just embarrassing,
bro. We need to talk about
anyway,
it.
Let's go back to CONMEBOL real quick. Bolivia, they secured their spot in for the playoffs. So repechaje.
Yeah.
So they won 1-0 against Brazil, which is whenever
they're not automatically in there. They can win. They can actually win. Qualify for the yeah.
Yes, yes. But
they're at least getting to a playoff game.
Right. So Bolivia hasn't. The last time they qualified for the World Cup was in 1994. But huge. I mean, there were fireworks. The players were on their knees, like in tears.
Have you seen these players? I'd be floored.
This is just like such a. I mean, it's also a bummer for Venezuela, who. They needed to win. I think they were winning against Colombia. They could have been in that spot and qualified for their first ever World Cup, but they ended up losing 6-3 against Colombia.
Shouts to Vino Tinto, man.
Yeah. Vino Tinto fans. So, but for Bolivia, in tears, they were just so emotional. They were fireworks for like, just making it to the playoff where you could possibly make it to the World Cup is enough of a reason to celebrate. And the point about adding countries to the World Cup, some people don't like it, but it gives us moments like this where, again, countries can get an opportunity to play in a competition that, again, means so much to not only that country, but the continent and the entire world. So it would be cool to see Bolivia back in a World Cup.
If they play in a World Cup, those would be national holidays in Bolivia.
Sure. But beating Brazil 1-0.
It's crazy.
It's pretty crazy. And even though it's at home, and obviously oxygen.
The ball bounces weird. You could have a heart attack.
The oxygen is only available for the Bolivian players. Yeah. So like Brazilian players, you do not get any oxygen. There's a very finite amount for you. We get all of it.
If I'm not mistaken, first of all, it's like you can't just show up to that stadium and run. You have to be there for like a day or two for your body to acclimate.
Yeah.
Again, my cousin passed away because he didn't do this. They told him to wait a couple days before he ran. That really high altitude in Mexico, and he didn't listen, and unfortunately he passed away. So it takes a while for your body to acclimate. They do other things, like they try to put like the pressure tanks,
mm-hmm.
like national teams or other teams will bring pressure tanks to try to get them to like assimilate or acclimate faster. But there's a chance that if they do play this playoff, it has to be a neutral ground, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Which means they're not going to get that advantage. And they are very different near sea level than they are in the clouds.
Yeah. So depending on who they play, I mean, you would imagine they play in CONMEBOL. They play some pretty obviously.
Wouldn't it be like against someone from Asia or Africa?
Oceania. Or, yeah, like or that's Oceania, usually how it works. Yeah. I don't know who they would play. I don't know if that's even set yet. But huge opportunity for Bolivia. So yeah, so we'll see. All right, another one that was pretty exciting. AFCON has been fantastic in the World Cup qualifying.
Nigeria
just,
what's going on, bro? You got some of the biggest names in the game,
and they can't, bro. It's just a different scene out there, bro. It's like that you just need a different level of like. I mean, we have CONCACAF, and we have our like nuances and weird intricacies and. AFCON is
Europeans the, don't understand what AFCON goes through, and they don't understand what CONMEBOL or I'm sorry, CONCACAF goes through. They think like, oh, why can't you just beat it? Yo, some of these teams
Nigeria
like, make
is
it very hard.
Third in their group, which is out of World Cup qualification. They need to be, I believe, they need to be in first to automatically qualify or
one of the best second places.
Yeah, yeah. And there's I think 7 or 8 groups or something like that in AFCON. So that's a shock because again they have.
They gonna make this a 62
players.
Team World Cup, bro.
Right, and it's fun because the watching the qualify, you sort of experienced this at the World Cup on some stage, but the qualifiers themselves is like when you look up Nigeria against South Africa TikTok or whatever or you know on look it up on TikTok and all the Nigerian pundits and content creators are all screaming, and I love like peeking in that world,
getting a taste of what the culture's saying.
Because then it's just like then they're having the same arguments that we have. They're like, oh, why isn't the manager calling in players from the Nigerian league? They're from here. They play here. They mean
A lot of the sentiment is like these players make too much money and they live too comfortable a life outside of our country. Like, so when they come here, they don't even care as much as our players would. It's kind of mimicking what a lot of people in America think.
Right. I mean, it's we sort of have the opposite because we like the quality of the player playing in Europe is.
But people are arguing maybe they don't care as much. They're making too much money playing for the national team. Didn't mean as much as it did in my day. I'm Landon Donovan, you know.
But it's fascinating that they have kind of a similar discourse.
Right. But when a big nation falls out of that place where they could qualify, sometimes a smaller nation like Bolivia steps in.
Yeah.
And for AFCON, it's Cape Verde. Oh my God, a tiny island.
The Cape Verdeans are, I believe it'd be the smallest. If they do qualify, they're currently in first. They need one more win and they'd be making it to, I believe this is their first World Cup. They wouldn't have, I don't think they've made it before.
Carter, can you check if Cape Verde ever even won again? Are they the San Marino of Africa?
Interesting. Oh, so I believe it'd be the smallest ever country, like smallest like landmass. To qualify for a World Cup, I had seen that online somewhere, but they had not. Cape Verde had not qualified. So this is a, monumental. When you think of, what's a Cape Verdean player? The dude that plays in for Columbus Crew, the defender. Of the year.
For real?
Yeah. I believe he's Cape Verdean. There's aren't many that I don't. I gotta like look at the roster. I don't know.
Yeah, same thing. I'm gonna pull this up. Shocked to find out they have a women's team. Are there that many people in the country? Sporting Club B. That's probably the biggest name I've seen so far. Shamrock Rovers.
Steven Moreira. He's the...
Steven Moreira.
So he's Cape Verde. He's the only one I know. Anybody else?
Oh, Ludogorets. There's a player from Ludogorets.
Yeah.
Krasnodar.
They just
Trabzonspor.
They beat Cameroon 1-0. So did you see the clip of Onana? Maybe we can show this in post. But Onana, after the game, he's trying to walk off the pitch, and there's a bunch of fans that are kind of surrounding him and storming him. And one dude is trying to take a selfie with Onana. And my man mushes him.
Oh, dude, now I want to see this. You know I'm a fan.
He's
of
like,
mushes.
Yo, get off. He's like, get off me, man. Yeah, right? Nah, like,
not now, bro.
Onana is pissed after losing that game. Where Cameroon are in second in the group, so they're 4 points behind Cape Verde. But yeah, and they look. Libya's is 1 point behind Cameroon, so there's so much.
What's their FIFA ranking? Can you look that up? Cape Verde's FIFA ranking?
73.
That's actually not terrible.
It's not terrible. Yeah.
Not terrible.
But bro, pretty remarkable. Cape Verde looking like they're going to qualify. Their next game is against Libya, another big game in Libya. So yeah, AFCON has been absolutely fantastic, bro.
This is gonna be wild. I'm kind of excited for some of these like smaller nations to get in because they bring the vibes. And I know this upsets, you know, fans. Oh, there's too many, you know, garbage teams in the World Cup now because you left 48 in. You forget, like we talked about this with Club World Cup, and then you forgot what it means for some of these fans to be a part of a competition like this. And that's the vibes you want. I don't truly care that much in the beginning what happens on the pitch as much as I care about what are the scenes. Once we get to the knockout stages, then I care about
it. There'll be some interesting countries that we're not used to seeing in the World Cup. So obviously South Africa is in first in Group C.
They just beat somebody big.
No, they drew to Nigeria.
Oh, to Nigeria.
Yeah. And then another one, Gabon.
Aubameyang.
Aubameyang and why am I just forgetting his name all of a sudden from LAFC?
Danny Boanga?
Boanga. Yeah, he's been fantastic for Gabon. I believe he scored like two or three goals in this window. So, to have Gabon in the World Cup will also be really fun.
Also what my wife's grandmother calls me when we eat.
Gabon?
You know what that is?
No, I don't know.
Italian said if you eat too much.
Okay, well, I can't believe they named the country after that.
Right? Damn. And everyone's so skinny that I've seen. Aubameyang's thin, Danny Boanga's thin.
All right. Look, the World Cup qualifiers, we have another window. I think because the U.S., Canada, Mexico already qualified, it's taken a little bit of the our focus away from qualifications because CONCACAF is also has a Costa Rica and Haiti. Just
remember the hell of the hexagonal.
Right. Well, now we have a nine hexagonal.
Damn.
But the Haiti and Costa Rica tied 3-3. That was also a really entertaining game. So yeah, we have sort of been less inclined to pay attention to the qualifiers because we're already in it, and that I think that tends to happen with a lot of the host countries. But doesn't take away from the entertainment that it brings. All right, let's wrap up there, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco. That's Alexis. Make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Hit the like button on this video if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe on YouTube if you have not yet. Make sure you follow us on Blue Sky as well at soccercooligans.com. That is our handle on Blue Sky. All right. Anything I missed? Anything else you want to say? Any parting words?
No, just love you guys.
All right. We love you guys and gals and NBs. All of you. Okay.
But not the dog.
only Alexa. I cannot. All right.
The thoughts provided here are the thoughts of everyone, including Cardi.
Take care, everybody.
And Yahoo.